Welcome to the Owner to Owner podcast with your host, Jesse Tyler, part of the EO Podcast Network.
Welcome to Owner podcast. It's great to have you with us. Jesse Tyler. I work at Hypotherm, global manufacturing and technology company that is almost 2,000 owners strong. I'm fascinated by ownership culture and how being an owner impacts the daily experience at work. Goal of this podcast is to have owner-to-owner discussions about a wide range of ownership experiences and culture topics, bring more insight to the individual ownership experience. There's a lot of we, there's a lot of us used when talking about ownership. This is about the individual, the impact on their work experience. This podcast grew out of an idea from Brett Kiesling from the EO podcast to have owners talking to owners. And he was very supportive of my interest in how ownership impacts frontline essential rank and file workers that are included in job quality, often job security and wealth building, where the rest of the economy tends to leave out the doers, the makers, the fixers, and the installers. It's my favorite part of employee ownership. So this is a series that focuses on women in manufacturing, bringing insight from women owners through our company, Hypotherm, to our product value stream from design, engineering, quality, global sales, operations, machine assembly, machine operators, shipping, and leadership.
Audio is at sometimes a challenge in a manufacturing environment and the tools provided with tech. So we appreciate listener patience if we have some hiccups with the audio quality.
In almost all of the owner to owner podcasts that we've recorded before, I meet the guests when we start recording. The series is a little bit different in that these are close friends that have asked to share their story. So I wanted to introduce our two guests today, Christine Pantaleo, frontline leader for the heavy industrial products on third shifts, and Jean Bustock, the machine operator, heavy industrial products, third shift as well. We're starting this recording at 4:17 in the morning so we can meet them in the middle of their shifts. Christine, can you share a little bit more about what you do and your role a little bit more in the intro?
Sure. Good morning, Jesse. Thanks for inviting us to share our time with you. I have been a leader at Hypotherm for 14 plus years. I have had a variety of roles throughout the company. I held a mid-level leadership role in a couple of different business entities. And I have been a frontline leader in the machine shop in three different businesses. Two of those positions were third shift and one was first shift. Prior to my time at Hypotherm, I achieved a Six Sigma Black Belt. And I spent 2 years project management work with a different company. I've been a leader in a leadership role since 1995. Yeah, that's about it in a nutshell. I raised a daughter on my own. I just paid my mortgage off. And I'm very excited about that. And I'm planning to retire in about 34 months.
That's great. That's great. I appreciate it. So I want to have Jean introduce yourself, and then I'll come back to you, maybe share some of your prior experiences relating to being a woman in manufacturing and sort of the how you got here and hear a little bit more of your story. Jean, can you add to my light introduction and give us a little more color on what you do and your role here?
Sure. I've been with Hypotherm for almost 14 years now. I'm hired on as a machine operator, went to assembly for a few years, and then came back to machine operator. And previously worked for the Woodstock Human Resort Corporation for 20 years before coming here. And I did a variety of jobs, a couple of which were also male-oriented, one being a golf course, doing that, caretaking on the golf course. And the last one was a kind of a maintenance position at the inn itself. So I'm not new to working within a male working a job. So that's about it in a nutshell.
That's great. That's great. And as we go through the conversation, as you want to share more of those insights, Christine, we were talking a little bit before we started recording, you said you've experienced some darker times and prior. Do you want to share your story?
In the 14 years I've been with Hypotherm, and actually one of the big draws to seek employment with Hypotherm 14 years ago was the advertisement of a no layoff policy. And anybody who works in manufacturing within the United States who is nearing retirement age has spent a number of those years watching a lot of industries leave this country and many manufacturing, because all of my leadership years have been in manufacturing. So I've spent some time working in the electronics industry. And I think, it's pretty obvious that we lost a lot of that industry overseas in the late 80s and 90s, all through the 90s. And I remember sitting as a leader in a conference room while one individual after another came in and we were able to deliver their Cobra package and their Sevens package and thank them for their service. We locked them out the door and laid them on. And this went on every Friday for about 2 months until the plant was empty and all of the work and all the equipment was removed overseas. So those were painful, painful, dark days. Many of those people were dear friends of mine. Some of those people were really going to have a hard time finding something else because they had spent their entire lives working for this company. And it's really about owning you as an artist's career. So probably one of the most thankful, the things I'm most thankful for from Microtherm as an owner is the fact that we do care for each other and we do not leave people off. I worked here during 2008 economic downturn and it was scary. It was scary. We had very, very few orders. Work was very light. However, business took care of all its people. We allocated frontline workers when there was no assembly or machining to do and redeployed them to positions of lawn care and gardening and things that would normally have been contracted. And so that we could retain all of our staff, all of our frontline assemblers and machine operators, we reallocated them to those positions. As a result, when the economy came back, compared to some of our publicly owned competitors, those folks hit the ground running. They were fully trained and ready to go. Yeah. We were able to restaff at 100% level rapidly with an experienced team that we had no real curve to get back on track for water customers. So our customers were ready with demand again. A lot of value to that, both in the security of the people who work here, frontline people, to Jesse's point, his comment early on, the ones who are usually most vulnerable during an economic downturn to a layoff, retaining them, their security, as well as the best interest of our business in regards to being prepared to beat our competitors up even a little bit harder by getting the ground running when business did return, and it did return in strong fashion.
It's amazing how we roared back when you prioritize your people and their knowledge. Dean, do you want to share a little bit of your work experience during that time? I'm trying to think back. Must have been right around when you started, right?
Yeah, I started in May of 2008. So I've been in the same department the entire time I've been here with Microtherm. So we didn't see, we did see a little lull in production, but most everybody in the electorates was there. We didn't get any of the feeling, but watching people get redeployed and volunteering to be redeployed to do those essential jobs that we contracted out was an amazing thing to see. Coming from the entity where if they had a business or if you worked the outside areas, you had mud season and after foliage, you had at least a month or two where you might have to do unemployment. So having the job where you were secure in the knowledge that you were going to be working 40 hours a week for the year was an awesome thing. And just, it just really, really hit home with the no layoff thing too, knowing that other businesses were laying off people due to the economy. And, one of the nice benefits also was the profit share at the end of the year, because the Woodstock Inn had profit share for a couple of years and then it went away. So for me, profit sharing being one of our really nice benefits, I'm very happy to get whatever I get every year.
Yeah, that's great.
I think Jeannie and I too can attest to the fact that women in manufacturing are typically when they're displaced through unemployment in an industry such as this, and if it's what you've been in for quite some time, I think it's even harder to find new employment because the market is flooded. At that point, usually all industries are suffering the same events. And historically, men are who take the roles in manufacturing, frontline and leadership, particularly in the trenches, as I like to call it. So to have that security as a woman in this kind of male-dominated industry is, I think, probably even more comforting to us because of that. And because of the fact that, I know Jeannie and I are both, it's kind of unique. We're independent, We support ourselves. There's not a spouse or a mate that pays our rent or pays half the rent or any of that. So if something happens, it's only us. Jeannie lives on her own. I live on my own. It's only us taking care of business. So it is very comforting to know that our company has no back.
That's great. That's great. I want to add a little bit more insight for listeners that aren't familiar with hypothermal plasma to really share a little bit more about what your third shift work is and the level of detail and volume that's involved with what you both do. So with the plasma cutters, plasma is called a fourth state of matter. Superheated gas conducts electricity. It's a very efficient way to cut steel, conductive metals. And what Christine and Jean do is they work with the machine. The machining is making the parts that wear, and the most common parts that wear in a plasma torch is the electrode Jean made a reference to. And that is a high volume part. It's certainly the shields and nozzles and other parts as well. So there's three buildings on our campus that are running 24 hours a day to try to keep up with the orders for consumables. And so when you hear machine operator or frontline leader for Christine with the role that she has, it really, we look at the machine operators as problem solvers. My way of saying it is problem solvers who make stuff in incredibly high volume because they're generally measuring to a third of a human hair and there's thousands of parts made a shift. So at this, with their humble introduction, I just want to maybe flesh that out a little bit. So with that in mind, so thinking about some of what you shared so far, what keeps you coming back?
My retirement. I'm only a few years away, and what I enjoy the most here now is working with new oncoming associates, operators, new leaders, new people who have interest in growth and development. Again, like I said, I'm a Six Sigma Black Belt, I'm a Lean Systems Green Belt, and I've been doing this for a couple of days. So if I can help somebody who wants to grow and develop, that's very rewarding to me at this point in my career. And that's probably the thing I enjoy and appreciate the most now. I've been through my years in career building and you know, selling myself and growing, and I want the next level role, and I want the next level role. And like I said, I've been in mid-level leadership roles, and I really find that at this point in my life and my career, I am where I like to be. And that's, again, in the trenches, on the front line, where the people come in, we're on the off shift. I work third shift by choice, not because I have to, but I love the new people. And second and third shift is where they come into. The first shift is typically our more tenured associates.
Yeah.
So I love the third shift excitement and the desire and the drive that you have when a new young associate comes in and wants to learn and grow and develop. And anything that I can teach them and help them learn, provide them guidance with, really brings me a lot of satisfaction at this point in my career. And retirement.
Well, that's healthy to talk about. Culture is part of ownership experience and wealth building in Hypotherm's case and many other ESOPs, employment companies, a meaningful profit sharing. What is your day like? What is your week? How do we do together for the year? What are we looking at for sunset to be able to retire on time? And the quirk of healthy ESOPs, and we certainly have it here. People live their whole lives a certain way, maybe paying off their mortgages early and doing other things, and they don't always stick around to 65 because they're taking care of themselves. And that's a wonderful problem to have. And I appreciate your mention of the leadership. When you look at some organizations have an official measure, but really I think all healthy organizations have an unofficial measure of leadership, with best way to say it would be how many leaders has that leader produced? So you're known for that. And if we officially measured it, you would have a whole stack to win. So we appreciate what you've done to generate our company and develop leadership. Dean, what keeps you coming back?
Benefits, retirement packages.
That's great.
The fact that I just enjoyed working.
Yeah, that's usually pretty lively when I walk through your area.
It's unique.
Camaraderie and teasing.
You've got a situation where Gene and I are both also tenured employees here, tenured associates. We're on third shift by choice because either one of us could be on first shift if we chose to be. And I watched Jeannie, we worked together for a couple of days. And I watched Jeannie, she likes to train people. She enjoys working with new people. I can see it when she does it. And we rely on her because of her time here to effectively train new people. We really appreciate her from coming from her leader. I think that's a big, you know, just to be clear, that's a big part of it. We're not on third shift because we just haven't found,
right.
You know, it's unusual, but I think we both kind of do it for
the same reason is it's nice. It's a nice, crisp, clean loop, you know?
Yeah, it's great. And if you want to weave in more thoughts, more insights on the third shift, traditionally 11 p.m. to 7 a.m. And then for listeners, when we're hiring, we're always looking for machine operators to keep regenerating, moving forward. Commonly, they come in on third shift, and then some of them like it, and some of them for a second and work their way towards that. Some of them over time work towards first. So I think it's important to understand the culture of the third shift, and the camaraderie is just...
Yep. And it's not for everybody.
Yeah.
You know, as Christina said, we're individuals, so it's a little easier for us as we don't have family that we have to work around.
Right.
Household. You know, if somebody has a family and has to work around the kids going to school or the sporting events or the odds and ends, it can be a little more difficult. It's manageable, but it can be a little more difficult than somebody that's single.
Yeah.
We have some folks on third shift who actually work third shift because they have children. So their spouse may work first shift, but they work third shift, and they do that to exercise themselves from the expensive cost of childcare.
Yeah, you definitely see that. And it's nice, Gene, over the years to see the many that you've taken under your wing and give them a smooth landing and a good boost to build their careers. I think something around third shift that I'd love to hear a little bit of insight in is, I just find it really fascinating from a energy management and sort of a life balance leap. And you can hear third shift, you can hear 11 to 7. Many of us in HR and other teams come in across the shifts to spend time with you and do problem solving, and our training team spends a lot of time on the off shifts. There's a lot of engagement, and we always tend to say after, wow, that's intense, you know, where I think it's easy to hear about, but maybe not, we don't hear enough of the voices. So I was hoping you could share a little bit of how you balance what you see that works or doesn't work for the third shift crew.
It's, you know, it's challenging. Discipline, I think, is probably the key to it. When I sit down with someone new and hold the one-on-one meetings that we do with our associates, especially new people, and the biggest piece of advice I try to give them is don't try and burn the candle at both ends. You know, just because you're working at night doesn't mean you can stay up all day. You're gonna burn out. We've seen that happen with people, for Jeannie. I live by myself. My daughter's grown and married and we have a beautiful grandson. So I just live my life. So your 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. is my 11 p.m. to 7 a.m. And your 9 p.m. to 7 a.m. is my noon to 8 p.m. So my afternoon and early evening is my bedtime, and my nighttime is my work time. So I just kind of flip my life. I get home from work in the morning. I go to work in the morning about 8 o'clock, crack a beer, cook my dinner, watch Netflix. All the same things you guys do at 5 p.m. or 6 p.m. So
that's what I was looking for. So thank you for, I think it's great to share it.
I've been in my teammates. It's really funny to get people come to my house, like, you know, if I'm getting work done to my house or deliveries, you know, and it's like 10 o'clock in the morning, and I've been like jammies with a beer in my hand. I'm sure they probably think I'm some kind of crazy drunk lady, and maybe they're right.
Well, it's just some insight to that, I think, is really helpful. I personal experience with your shift that was just a lot of fun before COVID, when you had your gathering at Salt Hill Town.
Really?
And I think it was like 7 in the morning, and all of you were like, well, this is nice to be at a beer, you know, at a farm having a beer at 7 in the morning. St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah.
It was funny coming into work. So I'm usually 6:37, something a little bit earlier, a lot of the days. And it was just so funny to stop at Salt Hill and that you guys are rocking just like it'd be, you know, 6:30. Dean, thoughts or insights on the third shift life?
I'm very similar to Christine, and that I'm usually up in the morning when I get home. I'm up until probably anywhere from 11 to 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. when I'm in bed for the afternoon, early evening.
Yeah.
So it's, for me, it's awesome to be able to go to a store at 7 o'clock when I get out of here and do my shopping. Nobody there.
That's true.
And when COVID hit, that was especially great because I'm in and out with the minimal plus. Although, you know, that works for me, obviously works for Christine as well, for a lot of other people with families. They're in bed as soon as they get home and up with the family to spend time with the kids. So
it doesn't count your weekend if particularly if your family, you have children, you know, spouse and children who don't live the third shift world. You know, your Thursday night you work, you go home Friday morning. Your Friday night, which is your family's start to the weekend, may not be much more than a meat sack at that point.
You know, and it's up to the individual. And then, of course, our shift starts Sunday night at 11 p.m. is our Monday morning, and it cuts into your Sunday. And a lot of people, I think that's probably the biggest thing I hear in my own personal feelings as well. It's the hardest thing a third shift is get some rest on Sunday and coming into work Sunday night, because it's typically for most people, it's a big family day.
Right.
You know, like, I myself miss a lot of my grandson's events on Sundays because I have to sleep. Right.
For sure. Sure. Switching gears a little bit, Gene, what are you most proud of in your career or your career so far?
The people I work with and able to help, either through training or just what little bit of mentoring I've done. If anything I can do to help people, I will. I like to see people succeed.
That's great. Thank you. Christine, what are you most proud of so far?
The thing I'm most proud of didn't really happen at Hike with Norman. It's when I got my Six Sigma Black Belt certification. It truly changed what I view about leadership and managing data, analyzing data, building databases, enhanced my computer skills 1,000-fold, you know, being able to run statistical data through Minitab and presentations in PowerPoint, you know, that I needed to deliver to the upper management of the company I work for at the time, project performance, project management, Gantt charts, the whole package that came with that experience.
That's great. Thanks for sharing that, both of you. So what would be your advice for women considering a career in manufacturing? And to sort of build towards this question for you. And your advice is, Gene.
All right, put me on the spot here. Whether you're male or female, doesn't matter. Come into the job and do it. There's no difference in our brain as far as our brains go. Most of us are physically capable of doing it. It's a good work environment, and Hike with Norman especially has great benefits. So join the team.
That's great. Yeah, we're looking for third shift machine operators. So maybe you spoke to a couple in that moment to help them consider coming aboard. Christine, what's your advice for women considering a career in manufacturing?
It is a lot different now than it was when I first entered manufacturing workforce. Like I said, I've seen it go through a lot of cycles. My first job in manufacturing was I was a seamstress in a sewing factory or piecework. That gives you any education. No, it wasn't by candlelight. The afternoon did have electricity. I've done that. I worked in a shoe factory for mini chocolate or moccasins. So things were much different in those background 80s and 90s. It was much less likely for a woman to advance and succeed. It was a role for you. And being a machine operator was not that role. Being a leader was not that role. Being a statistical analyst was not that role. Being an engineer was not that role. So
we've certainly come 100 miles, and it's great to see. But my advice would be thick skin and wear gloves. Keep your skin thick. Be ready to take constructive criticism. Be ready to take that constructive criticism and use it to grow your abilities and be yourself and be strong.
And I would only add that, you know, we all make mistakes. I just say that. At least for me, is taking ownership of those mistakes. And that's a big thing here at Microsoft.
Well, thank you for that. I'd like to transition us to your insights into ownership. So the big question in the ownership world is, what does ownership mean to you, Christine?
Job security. Security knowing that because of that, this company operates differently than a publicly owned company where they work to satisfy stockholders. I am the stockholder. So they're working to satisfy me. I don't want to beat this word to death, but retirement. You know, I remember when I was a child, my father had a pension with the company he worked for retirement. And I'm in a publicly owned company that does not happen. Pretty much you are on your own. If you have a 401k, you hope for the best that you're going to be able to retire on your 401k. Here, as our stock valuation continues to grow, the company and the business are doing well. We're expanding in all the right ways. You know, I can hardly wait to leave, especially as I'm 34 months away.
But I'm excited to hear the, you know, that's my pension. That is my pension. And I'm very fortunate
because in a lot of other companies that will not be something that would be an option. And I most likely would not be considering retiring at 34 months because I would have that level of security that I know is there at the end.
That's great. Thank you. Dean, what does ownership mean to you?
I agree with Christina with security, and I'm secure having a job to come to every day. The retirement part of that is also a very big deal for me, having come from the Woodson family. So we had a retirement package, and now they have a 401k that they go by. So
the security and retirement are the two.
The big things for ownership for me.
Well, I appreciate your sharing those because, you know, how do you talk about it? Because they're the daily experience. There's hopefully job quality and job security, but an ESOP is a retirement plan.
That's
so great to hear you talk about it. That's the long view. I was looking at the NCEO, National Center for Employee Ownership. I was looking at some stats they had up with some of the group I was working through, cultural immersion, the onboarding program, just to help them try to get kind of hands around what this could mean if they stay at an employee-owned company for the long term. I usually say 7 to 10 years, you'll start to see that it really adds up. And the NCEO data was that employee owners in the U.S. have twice the retirement. It's some fairly dramatic numbers when we start to dig into that. We won't go here, but the idea that you can work hard, help the company grow, and be able to retire comfortably. All the retirees, their advice always is, don't rely on just the shares. You got to live a certain life. You got to hammer on that 401k. You got to buy used cars. It's sort of this universal. For the ones, especially for the ones that have retired early, there's a larger message, but it's been amazing to see what they get in return for dedication to the company. And for you, 34 months and kind of the average, you're happy.
Maybe one of two warriors.
You know, the thing is, you could have this same kind of job, working just as hard, contributing just as much, get just as much back of it satisfaction wise. And if it's a public owned company,
yeah.
There is no stop at the end of the season. There is much less job security because, again, their purpose, and it's just the way it is, their purpose is to satisfy their stockholders.
Right.
And you're not that person.
There's also the fear of a company going belly up and the pension disappears. That is a big issue now as well.
Yeah, COVID's been pretty hard on the business world, and there are some examples where employee-owned companies haven't made it through. Definitely share the gratitude to be at a very successful employee-owned company that plays a critical role in the global economy. Christine, if we can go back to something you mentioned, I'd love to see if you both are willing to dive into it a little bit. I'll rephrase it. Does employee-owned worker work harder than a non-employee-owned? Can you go into that a little bit?
I don't know if it's harder. As far as, you know, my hands are faster, my feet move quicker, I think it's more of a conscientious evaluation of that. I recognize wasted spending. As an owner, I recognize wasted spending. I recognize and worry about, as much as anybody else, some of the supply chain issues we've experienced, you know, and the struggles that's put on our business and our friends and our coworkers and our co-owners from the assembler to the operations leader and everybody in between. I think that's my answer. Is I'm not sure it's harder. I think it's just the kind of a different mindset. You're more, you know, it's more of a learning mindset.
Yeah. Yeah. I threw it out there. It's not crisp and clean question. And it's, and just hearing you sort of work through what that means is very interesting. It's very insightful. Can you add?
I think individually, it's the mindset of the individual. I'm saying a little peculiar in that way because I've always worked the way I've worked. I do the best job I possibly can for any job I take on. If it means I got to try and put out 6,000 parts in a night, I'm going to do my best to do that. Talking for the assembly community. And I'm going to do shaving and I do my best to put out a high quality part. And that even goes back to the Woodstock and whatever job I took on, I did it to the best of my ability. So for me, that kind of was coincidental. The ownership part of that kind of worked well with the way I work. It melds together. Individually, there are people out there that may not work harder.
I think there are a lot of people who don't recognize the value.
I really think that they don't understand what ownership is about, and that affects how they work.
They can't
get all the humans onto every bus.
Right.
I asked the question in onboarding, in ownership conversations, when we ask, well, what does ownership mean to you? That evolves over time. What I find really, just really interesting and kind of inspiring is when we asked during onboarding, we built our onboarding intensive around the question, what does ownership mean to you? How does your work and role impact our customer? And it's amazing to have people who 3 weeks before, 4 weeks before started here, said, can you help me with the benefits? Because I've never had them. You got to help me understand the shares that don't have any retirement. And then 3 or 4 weeks in, they write these beautiful statements of what ownership means to them. It's always fun to delve into it. I want to have a little bit of fun and see if we can boil this down. If you had a form with three blanks on it, and in this moment, in this morning, you had to describe ownership in only three words, what would those words be?
Word number one, retirement. Word number two is security. And word number three is investment. You invested in the company as an owner.
Thank you. Gene, do you have three?
In agreement with all three of those.
You second our motion?
Yes.
That's great. That's always interesting to see what people will pick. And often after asking this a few days later, they'll come back around like, can I add a couple more? So I appreciate your willingness for those. What do you think is one thing that Hyperform does well around ownership culture that you would want to share out? So, you know, other peers in the world of employee ownership that are listening to this, what's something you think we do well, but they could consider using, sort of the idea of helping each other out in the community?
I think we celebrate the ownership feature of our company, of our business very well. You know, I mean, April was like Christmas rev too. You know, it's exciting when we know the stock price is coming out. We get a lot of good information from our finance folks with updates on the condition of the business, which help us understand where our value is going to go between the economy and how we're going. Acquisitions. It's always interesting to hear about the acquisitions and the pursuit of more acquisitions. So I think those are some of the things we do well. Jack Reed does a great job sharing his updates. I always enjoy staying on his phone. Yeah, so I think they do a good job in the celebration part of it and kind of keeping everybody aware.
That's great. Gene, is there something that we do around ownership that you'd want to share with other owners?
Not just the celebration of our own, but we also celebrate the other companies like King Arthur, you know, by
they give us a nice six pack of, we get the King Arthur little mug cakes or whatever.
So I think that's an awesome thing to share within the community. And it gets it out there that there's more companies out there doing.
Yeah. King Arthur, Harpoon, Gardner Supply, a lot of close friends nearby. Always, if you can work employee owned and you can buy employee owned, that can include co-ops as well. Makes a difference for a country. Dean, why should a woman considering a career in manufacturing consider working here at Hyperform?
I think we as a whole do a really good job of working with genders in general. There's no exclusions. How do I want to say it? I want to say not just women, but you know, anybody that's having an addiction, just develops a community thing, corporate friendly type thing. So I think we're very good as a country and kind of inclusive.
It's great to hear that. Yeah, for listeners, Gene mentioned that we're one of the early adopters of the Recovery Friendly Workplace Initiative. I don't know the numbers, but I know it's more than dozens of coworkers that we wouldn't have without the Recovery Friendly program. So that could be its own episode and discussion, but it's an important part of the values out there and respect for the individual. So it's nice to hear that you feel you can come as and be included. For you, Christine, advice for a woman considering manufacturing career, why should she come here and work at Hyperform?
Going to get a fair shake. If you want to come in and build sales and you're motivated to do so and you want to present yourself as such, then you will. If you have skills and you want to bring them to a company that you're more likely to recognize and reward them, you want to come here because they will be recognized. Nothing happens overnight. There are no guarantees in this life. But there are a lot of opportunities here that will cross your path that you may not experience in a public-owned company in a different culture.
I appreciate it. I ask all the owner-to-owner podcasts give them a chance to promote hiring further USAP and why it's good to work there. And so it's a lot of fun to hear both of you share that for Hikatherm. So I appreciate it. So we ask all of our guests to share their EO aha moment. So it's not the first time you heard about employee ownership. Maybe not even when you started to like it. Can you think of a moment where you said, oh, this is going to be a game changer? Have you had an EO aha moment that you want to share?
Every April.
With this.
And every April with the stock price announcement and the percentage crazy growth and getting closer to retirement. Every year that I've been here, as I watch that, as I open my certificates and see where it's at, and every year it gets, the percentage is generous. You know, we're very, very good company with good growth. So our stock's value continually rises. And like I said, as I get closer to retirement, I'm like, wow, I'm going to be okay. You get a little less worried about the Social Security sort of running out of money news and feel a little more comfortable. And, you know, I am not going to be that 8-year-old bagger at the grocery store because I need the money.
Yeah.
You know,
awesome. I might be not because of money, but because of me. I will continue to work in some
I will mow, I will tend my trees, I will different.
Yeah. I'm not using video for this, but I'm smiling. The two of you sitting still, I just don't picture. All right, so Christine, you have an annual aha moment. So every time you see those chairs, you have that.
Like I said, it's like Christmas round two. Especially like I said, the closer, the older I get, the more important it becomes.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Gene, did you have a particular moment or another insight you can share?
I really haven't had an aha moment other than, you know, understanding the meld of my work ethic with the ownership culture. I think my aha moment will be when I actually get set to retire and see the benefit at the end. I would say that because this is something that our company does is, you know, whether it be annually or every couple of years, bringing in like Cramathon Council of Summer retirement packages and being able to work with them and say, okay, am I going to meet my goal? And I for sure am with that stock package added onto my core one. So I would say knowing that I'm going to get to where I want to be when I retire is my aha.
That's great. That's great. Well, through this series, through this podcast, back to owners and across the whole career span. And so we were talking the other day with Catherine Thurston, 3-year reviews, I think 6 years. So it could be a very different answer along.
Sure, that's for sure.
But it's always fun talking ownership where folks have an eye on the horizon, are proud of what they've built up, and are thinking about their distribution.
Yeah.
It's always fun to see the smiles and the twinkle in the eyes, thinking of what that can add up to. So really appreciate your time, your insights, your friendship, and bringing some insight to being women, third shift manufacturing, and being co-workers and fellow owners. So I really appreciate your time. So thanks for being on the podcast and sharing your stories.
Well, thank you. Thanks, Jesse.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it. Just want to thank all of the growing trove of listeners for the Owner to Owner podcast, bringing voices of frontline essential employee owners to the conversation. So thank you very much. We'll look forward to speaking with you again soon. Take care.
We'd love to hear from you. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at EO Podcast Network. This podcast has been produced by Brett Kieslink for the EO Podcast Network. Production assistance by Victoria Huerta. Original music composed by Max Kieslink. Branding and marketing by Bitsy Plus Design. And I'm Bitsy McCann.